Welcome to the James River Church Podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Pastor John Lindell, lead pastor at James River Church. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
I want to take just a few moments, and then we're going to spend some time in the presence of the Lord. But all the while we're on vacation, I was thinking about this concept, this passage, and thinking specifically about what happens when you and I gather in this place to worship the Lord. I think there's something very, very significant about the gathering of people together. And certainly if you're watching online and you're unable to be here, then I get it. And God meets you where you're at for sure. At the same time, I would say, and I say this because this week I was having lunch with a businessman and he brought this up. He said, you know, we were at our lake house and we were watching James River. We were doing it through the summer. And you mentioned, hey, if you're at your lake house watching, you need to get up here. And he said, I looked at my family and said, next week we're going to James River. And he said, honestly, it was a great thing for us. He said, because you're right, there is potentially a distraction in the online viewing that when you're in the room is different. But I would like to suggest to you that beyond distractions that may or may not occur, there is something spiritually significant when people gather in God's house. One of the things that has been, I think a concern somewhat is in our contemporary Christianity, we've gotten this idea that the house of God doesn't really matter because we're all a temple of the Lord and we can have church wherever we're at. And while there is a sense where that is true, to somehow think that buildings don't matter, and I'm not saying the church is a building, but buildings do matter. If you outside in 90 degree weather, you're going to thank God that we have a building, right? That's air conditioned, right? So but beyond that, there's something about gathering together, and you see this in the Bible. The psalmist says this in Psalm 26. He says, I love your sanctuary, Lord, the place where your glorious presence dwells. While God is everywhere, and God can meet us privately and does in our personal devotions, there is something unique that happens when the saints of God, the believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, gather together as his bride, as the church, and come together. God meets them in a unique and, the psalmist says, glorious way. When you go through the Bible, you see mention over and over again of houses of worship. So the tabernacle, Moses builds this tabernacle. It's a tent. It's designed to be portable because the children of Israel are moving from Egypt up to the promised land. And as they travel, they need a place where they can worship that is portable. And then you go from the tabernacle and you come to Solomon's temple, and Solomon builds this beautiful temple, and fire falls from heaven, and God sanctifies that place with his presence in an incredible way. And then the temple is destroyed by the Babylonians hundreds of years later. Following that, Zechariah and Haggai begin to preach about building the temple, rebuilding it. And so there's their temple. And then when you come to the time of Jesus, Herod the Great, for his own glory, but in order to gain the favor of the Jewish people, built the temple of Jesus' day. It's called the Second Temple or the Herodian Temple. And again, it was a place where Jesus ministered in the temple courts. But the first house of God mentioned in the Bible is mentioned in Genesis 28. And it involves this story of Jacob. Jacob's the grandson of Abraham, the son of Isaac. He has a twin brother, a fraternal twin, by the name of Esau. And Jacob has cheated Esau. Esau has threatened now to kill him. Jacob, at 60 years of age, is on the run. And we pick it up in Genesis 28, verse 11. When he reached a certain place, he stopped for the night because the sun had set. I point this out because whenever you're reading the Bible, you want to pay attention, if the Bible mentions the time of day, it's indicative of what's either happening in that person's life or of the circumstances of their life. For example, you are in John 13, and it's the Last Supper, and it says Judas went out, and it was night. It's saying something. It's a very dark time for Judas. He goes out, and he's going out into the night. So this is a dark time for Jacob. We won't go into all the reasons, but essentially he has nothing with him. At 60 years of age, he is fleeing from his brother. He's going to go hundreds of miles away, and the sun is setting, and it's as if everything in his life has blown up. Everything has turned out as poorly as it possibly could. And he lays down at night, taking one of the stones there. He put it under his head and lay down to sleep. He had a dream in which he saw a stairway resting on the earth with its top reaching to heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. So when we think of this stairway, and there's the old song, "We are climbing Jacob's ladder," it's not a ladder, okay? And it's not a tiny stairway. It's a massive, think of a massive staircase. Because what you have is you have angelic beings, potentially by the hundreds or maybe thousands, going up and down on this stairway between heaven and earth. And they're above it. Literally in the Hebrew, it's beside him. There beside him stood the Lord. And he said, "I'm the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you and your descendants the land on which you are lying. Your descendants will be like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west, the east, the north, and the south." So here's Jacob with nothing, on the run, and God suddenly appears to him right beside him and gives him this amazing promise and assurance. "And all peoples on earth will be blessed through you and your offspring. I'm with you and will watch over you wherever you go. I'll bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I've done what I promised you." When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it." And he was afraid and said, "How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven." Early the next morning, Jacob took the stone he had placed under his head and set it up as a pillar and poured oil on top of it. He called that place Bethel. Then Jacob made a vow saying, "If God will be with me and will watch over me on this journey I'm taking and will give me food to eat and clothes to wear so that I return safely to my father's house, then the Lord will be my God. And the stone that I have set up as a pillar will be God's house. And of all that you give me, I will give you a tenth." Now, I just want to briefly point out some things that happen in the house of God. Because the things that happened at Bethel, the house of God, the gateway to heaven for Jacob, are the same things that happen here tonight. That this is not just another meeting happening in the greater Springfield area. It's not just a gathering of people as if we were gathering for a cause that's just another cause. When we gather in the house of God, there is an intersection of the natural and the supernatural in a way that is meaningful beyond our ability really to comprehend, and probably only in heaven will we really understand what was happening as we came together as saints in the house of God. There are things happening even right now. First of all, I would suggest to you that there's angelic activity. That Jacob, he is one person, and think of this, one person and angels, we don't know how many, but I'm gonna suggest to you, my own personal opinion is, it's a lot of angels going up and down because of one person. That God can declare anything he wants in our life, and the Holy Spirit does many things for us, but I would also suggest to you that much of what God does, he does through angelic beings. Now, the caution to you in that is, I don't want to make more of angels than we should, but I certainly don't want to make less of angels than we should. Both are errant. But the writer of Hebrews says, are they not messengers sent to serve those who will inherit salvation? So they're angelic beings that are right now in this room, and are they worshiping with us? Certainly they're doing that, but I would suggest they're doing a whole lot more than that. That they're delivering, that they're providing answers, they're messengers, that they're strengthening people. Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, as he's praying, the angels come and attend him. They strengthen him. And that's not just Jesus that they do that for. They can strengthen you. It's one of the reasons why you could come in the service one way and leave another way, because there are supernatural things happening and you don't have to see them to benefit from them. They're doing all kinds of things. Angels are very active in our life. And for some of you, and I think this is the danger for many Christians, their theology or understanding of angels has been shaped by pop culture, which is a terrible place to get insight on angels or even opinions on angels. But angels are there and they do minister. I had somebody ask me when we got back, they said, did you have storm damage in your yard? And because we have some mature trees in our yard. And I said, no, we didn't have minor stuff, but nothing major like we saw over by the airport and other places. And the James River team, so proud of them. They're out helping people clean up. It's just so amazing to see that. Yeah, give them a hand. That's awesome. So this guy said, well, that's really odd that you didn't. And he said, what do you think that is? And I said, well, I'm just going to tell you, years ago, we lived out in the Ozark area, and we had a lot of trees in that yard. And when the hurricanes came through, there was one year, there were two hurricanes that hit Houston. And then the remnant of that came up into this region and just soaked the ground. And we had a straight line wind, and we lost 13 trees in one storm. I mean, it was just like a war zone out there. And when that happened, there was nobody else in the neighborhood who had trees go down. I was like, what is the deal? I mean, honestly, I'm gonna be honest with you. I thought, man, here I am, I'm a pastor and I'm serving God and I got all the trees down and nobody else does. And then part of me says, well, it's better me than them and all of that. But still I was thinking, this is not natural. And if it's not natural, I always think that. So anyway, when we happened to move into this house in 2020, beautiful trees, and there was one cedar tree that was my favorite tree on the whole property. It's one of the prettiest cedar trees. And I just said it to Debbie the first week we moved in, and that's my favorite tree. And the next week, there's like this mild storm, and it's laying across my driveway. And I was like, what in the world? My favorite tree just gone. So I said, okay, this is not natural. This is supernatural. So I said, I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to deal with it. If it's not natural, it's supernatural. I'm going to deal with it supernaturally. So what am I going to do? I'm going to go pray over my trees. So, and I'm going to ask God to set angels by my trees during the storms to just hold them up, you know, keep them in place. Now, some of you are saying, oh, brother, that's so loony. I mean, like, God really cares about trees. Well, I'm going to have to say this. He created them. Creates them, he cares for them. That's my opinion. And he answers prayer. And as your faith is, be it unto you. I've not had any trees to clean up. I'm not bragging. If I brag, it's on the Lord. I'm just saying, some of you need to go home and pray. The guy I told this to, he's like, I'm taking my wife and we're going to go around my yard and we're going to pray because he had some trees down. So anyway, angels can help you. And then pray to an angel. Don't pray to an angel. Pray to God. But you can ask God to send an angel. You can ask God to send an angel to protect somebody, right? So the house of God is a place of angelic activity. It's also a place where God speaks. Look at this. It's very interesting. There above it, or beside him, stood the Lord. And he said, And what is God doing? God is taking Jacob at a very low spot. And you know, some of you would have the idea, well, why would God speak to me? Because honestly, I'm not where I would want to be, and I'm not what I would want to be. And so when I clean up my act, then God will talk to me. Well, that you couldn't extrapolate that off this passage. Jacob's at the lowest. I mean, he's a crook. He's a cheat. He's a liar. He's not honest. And now he's on the run, and he has nothing. And at that moment, the lowest point, he finds himself in the house of God. And God is not just speaking from the top of the ladder. God is standing right beside him and saying, Jacob, I want to do some things in your life. And he simply makes this huge promise to him. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this. There's no negotiation. There's no like, hey, are you going to change? Are you going to start following me? No, it's God coming as God and saying, I'm going to do something very significant in your life. The Lord speaks. He can speak through a song. He can speak through obviously the message or a friend. He can talk to your heart. He can speak in a variety of ways, but he does speak. When you're in the house of God, he speaks. One last thing I want you to notice is it's an intersection of the natural and the supernatural. So, hey, this building is built naturally. I will say this. When I say it, I'm almost very convicted because it's a supernatural story how this building was built. Very supernatural. At a time, buildings were being built in the area, churches that I could name, $110, $120 a square foot, which you say, wow, that's really cheap. We built this for $62 a square foot. So, I mean, this is a miracle, just an absolute miracle from start to finish. But watch what happens here with Jacob. When Jacob awoke from his sleep, he thought, surely the Lord is in this place, and I was not aware of it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God. This is the gate of heaven. And so what happens when you're here is you're moving from the natural realm into the supernatural realm because you come here. It explains why this has been true from the beginning, and we just recently had some people say it, and I'm just always thrilled when I hear it. They're like, you know, I came in and I just started weeping, and I just had to weep for a few weeks because the presence of the Lord in this place. We had two families who were driving by and had never been to the church and felt as they drove by they were supposed to come to the church. God's building his church. Just recently, this happened. It's just so crazy to watch that happen. But when you come in here, what's happening is you're moving from the natural to the supernatural. This is why we respect. I'm not talking about making an idol out of any auditorium or sanctuary, but it's why we respect this place, because this is a place where God uniquely meets with people and eternally transacts things in their life that would not happen any other way. It's like you're going into a different world when you come in here. Let me put it to you this way, so because I'm not trying to make it ethereal, I'm just simply saying the reality of it. But like I remember one time we had a guy who was a counselor out at the FedMed, that's a federal correctional facility over on Sunshine where the medical prisoners from around the federal penitentiary system are brought here for treatment or maybe stay there. And so he said, hey, do you want a tour? I was like, yeah, that'd be great. So he, you know, you go through those gates. Have you ever gone through? And I mean, any jail would be that way, but especially that place. So you go through that, the big iron doors and all of that. And you realize instantly you've moved from one realm to another. You've moved from a realm of freedom to a realm of captivity. And so I'm there, and we're down a hallway, and all of a sudden he gets called, and he's like, I'm going to have to just stay here. Don't move, and I'll be back. And I was like, what are you doing? So anyway, it was a different realm. Let me just put it that way. When you come in here, it's a different realm. You can't see things with your physical eyes, but they're very, very real. And see, what happens is the enemy wants you to doubt what's happened here. So like Jacob gets up in the morning, there's no stairway, There's no angels. There's no God standing behind him. And he could have the same kind of questions you would have, except his experience was so dynamic. You know, sometimes you come into a service and God touches you, and then you're like, was that really real? Was that just me? Was it just me wanting that or desiring that or thinking that or hoping that? And the enemy loves those kind of questions because he wants you to doubt the reality, and not only the reality, but the significance and the spiritual power that is a part of being in God's presence when we're in this place together. It's a very powerful, powerful moment. It explains why God can change your life in a second. It explains why you can have somebody who is drunk start walking from the back of the aisle and be sober by the time they get to the front. I mean, listen, these things happen. It explains how you can have somebody who has a liver eaten up and then they leave and their liver's whole. It explains, there are things that happen when you're in the presence of God. And I'm not saying God can heal anywhere and God can sober anybody anywhere. I'm just saying here in his presence, more things happen in his presence than outside of his presence, all things being equal. That's why you can come in here needing wisdom and you get it. Because God is there. And so I'm just saying God's here tonight. He's here, and this is an opportunity. This is an intersection of the natural and supernatural. And I hope that when you come into this place, that there is in your heart this anticipation for what might happen, because this is not just a meeting. And this is not just us getting up and making up a song. Listen, very rarely do we use a song set in the prayer meeting. We don't know what we're going to sing because we don't know what God wants to do. So that's how we approach it. The musicians don't know. They could have a whole thing. They kind of in your mind, you think, well, we might do this or that. And then we're like, nope, the Lord is doing something totally different, because you're in a place where God is there and God is working, and God is working for you and in you and wants to work with you tonight. Isn't that encouraging?